Welcome to Mid-Century Modernism with Monique, your go-to podcast for all things architecture, design, and innovation within mid-century modernism. Join me on a journey through the golden age of design, where every episode brings you fresh inspiration for modern living and unlocks the secrets of this iconic and timeless style. What are we waiting for? Let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Mid-Century Modernism with Monique. I'm Monique Anton, your host, and I have today on the show my friend Danny Heller. How are you, Danny?
Hi, Monique. How are you?
Very good. I'm happy that you're here.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
This is so fun. I'm glad we could do this over Zoom. And thankfully, Zoom is allowing us to talk to Danny, who is all the way down in Southern California.
Yeah, fingers crossed it, you know, makes it through the whole interview just fine.
I will. So Danny is an artist and an amazing painter that has been exhibited all over the world, from Paris to Madrid to LA. And he's been featured in magazines like Dwell, California Home and Design, Architectural Digest, hello, Architectural Digest Spain, and Atomic Ranch, and a Cosmopolitan magazine and others. And I want to start by asking you how you got into mid-century modern architecture and this love of yours. How did that start?
Thank you. It's sort of been a long process. So, you know, I grew up in the suburbs of Los Angeles, so I was always around kind of that post-war tract housing. It wasn't particularly high-end, like modernism, but it did have that kind of, you know, mid-century 1950s kind of classic tract housing vibe that you'd probably find in most suburbs around the U.S. I didn't think much of it, but, you know, I did take a class in mid-century architecture in college. And then I think when I returned to the Valley, I started picking up on this kind of
television
vibe,
you know,
and Mad Men. It also sort of
things like that, movies like, I don't know, Pitch Me Can.
And so I think the aesthetic started to kind of sink in, and I was more aware of it. And my first foray into modernism were Eichler's. It was the Balboa Highlands tract outside of LA, and actually grew up like, I don't know, just minutes from it. And so, you know, I made it a point to drive through the area, and then I was hooked.
I love it. I love it that it started with Eichler's. You know,
yeah.
A lot of people say that Eichler's, because they were the most math produced home of this style, usually was the gateway for people to get into modernism.
So. Totally my gateway drug to modernism.
Yes. So we are starting here with a screen. Danny is going to show us this beautiful art. For those of you listening on all of these podcasts, please go to my YouTube under my name, Monique Anton, to view all of his amazing paintings. So we're starting here, how appropriate, with this Eichler. So if you could share with us a little bit about this painting, so gorgeous. And by the way, everyone, you can purchase any of these on his website at dannyhellerart.com. But this one is so beautiful and vibrant. How did this come about?
Yeah. So I think what kind of drew me to the Eichler's and modernism in general is just how sort of stripped down and clean it was. You know, it wasn't like super fussy with weird ornate decorations. Now, I mean, in the neighborhood, some of them had been bastardized, you know, with big, you know, Roman columns and things like that. But, you know, the good ones, the pure ones, the original ones, the original aesthetic is just sort of that clean geometric kind of design. And it's very strong and it's very engaging. And so I wanted to kind of capture that. I wanted to study how the light hits every single angle. Again, all that geometry and sort of, you know, what that can do visually. It almost turns into sort of a geometric abstract kind of image with just shapes and blocks of color. So, yes. You know, with this painting that you see on the screen, you know, that pop of that kind of orangey red door versus kind of a mint green surrounding. So the color combinations pop, the geometry pops, and then it's sort of all set within this, you know, very kind of tranquil suburban setting.
I love it. And it looks like a photograph, to be honest. A lot of your work doesn't even look like a painting. It looks so real and vibrant. And I think we discussed this before, but I think that even for people that don't understand modernism and it's not maybe their aesthetic, they are firsthand getting this lifestyle. You're translating this beautiful architecture to them. And I think they see this happy, beautiful, wonderful architecture. So thank you for making that so, you know, crossing borders of different genres to people. So
thank you. I appreciate that. Because I do portray these beautiful homes as realistically as possible to show that they are, in fact, real homes, things that really do exist. And I've had a number of people come up to me saying that they either grew up around this or they currently live around this kind of architecture, and they wouldn't normally think twice about it, but the way I've sort of isolated it and captured it, it sort of makes them more aware of it and thus appreciate it more. So, you know, I feel like my job is done when they tell me that they appreciate it.
Yeah, mission accomplished on that one. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, look at that. Here's another one. So the last image is the kind of token flat roof Eichler. This one has a bit of that gable to it. And of course, you know, classic car just kind of poking out of the carport there, which you'll see in a lot of the Eichlers, you know, sort of completes the whole set. So, but you know, again, you know, pops of color and just all the really cool geometry, the repetition of lines, things like that, that I think, you know, as a painter, it's rewarding because it's very engaging to the eye. And then, you know, hopefully the viewer can kind of get lost in some of the details, you know, how it's made up and sort of appreciate this home versus, you know, the Cracker Jack home that's, you know, right down the street from them.
Right. I love that you have a lot of these classic cars in your paintings. I think you've really captured that part of this lifestyle. And I know a lot of people who are Eichler owners didn't know that they would become such classic car enthusiasts, but it just sort of happens as you're living in these houses. You kind of absorb that time. I love that.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. You know, it's sort of that total lifestyle. You know, once they get the house that's of the period, then the furniture comes, the cocktails come after that, and then of course the classic car.
Yeah, you find yourself with tiki torches and you know, all of these things. So I have become a huge collector of everything vintage, everything mid-century modern, even the clothing. As you can see, I always wear a mid-century modern shirt for these podcasts. It's so fun.
Exactly.
And one of my favorite paintings that you have is of Taliesin West. I know we will get to that eventually, but I love how you're capturing, see, there they are, the cars, we've got the flamingos, but you went to Taliesin West and you take the photographs yourself, right, for the paintings.
Yeah, so my working process is, you know, I work entirely from my own photos. I feel like
it is. Oh.
You can't really know your subject matter if there's that kind of cold distance of just seeing it, you know, someone else's photo. It's like to actually visit the location, to see how the atmosphere is around it, the lighting, how the lighting changes it. You know, really feel that presence, and I feel like it informs my paintings, and maybe my paintings are better for it. So so my process, I get to actually visit these places, so that's sort of reward enough, and then I get to spend time painting them, which is icing on the cake.
That's amazing. Yeah, you've been to a lot of places. You know, you have Lautner homes here, you showcased, I think you have the Stahl House, is that correct? Did I see that somewhere?
You know what? No, I didn't do. Well, I've been to the Stahl House, and I've been always kind of contemplating the right painting, but I haven't sort of landed on the right, you know, the right scene yet.
Mm. Well, I think that might be next on your list. Well, I'll have requests. I'm sure if we start requesting these, that you can do that and bring that to life for us to have in our homes.
Perfect.
So I was going to ask you, I know you've been in galleries, you've been shown all over the world. When did that start for you? And what was that process like?
Yeah, it was funny because I went to school, I studied at UC Santa Barbara, and I studied fine art, like painting and everything. But my interest sort of took me into design. I started getting into set design for theater. And like I said, I took like an architecture class. And so I think the idea was when I graduated to actually get into the film industry, which I kind of grew up around, and do art, but as it pertains to film. So set designs, you know, that kind of thing, right? But I did some internships and I dabbled in film here and there. And it turns out it wasn't really a good fit for me. And so I was a bit disheartened, but I realized, you know, the one thing I could still do was paint. You know, I didn't need an internship for that. I didn't need to join a film crew. I could just do that in my garage. So, so I made it a point to paint just about every day after my regular job. And eventually, I caught wind of group shows where you could kind of enter like a submission and, you know, get chosen for a group show. And so, I was able to get picked up at this really good gallery in LA. It's called La Luz de Jesus Gallery. And what was cool was it was a gallery that was showing a lot of artists that actually also worked in the film industry or animation. It wasn't very stuffy. It wasn't kind of what you would normally think of, you know, high galleries or whatever. It was just sort of the everyman's gallery with just the most incredible artists showing there. So I was able to get picked up in some group shows there, and the work sold, and then it just kind of snowballed from there. It was, you know, enter this show or get picked up by this gallery. And I think because my work, I don't know, touched a nerve or what have you, it would sell, and then I'd get picked up for more shows. So, you know, it's just a matter of trying and taking chances, and you never know what can happen.
That's right. Well, I think through our community too, I've always had people send me your art or an image online. And I know social media is so annoying for a lot of us, but I think it can be very good for artists to show their work and to have it circulate. Have you found that to be?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's sort of, you know, the double-edged sword. We hate it, but also we live by it. I mean, you know, people in my industry, artists, it really is all about getting the work out there, because, you know, who's going to buy a painting that's locked in your garage and never sees the light of day, right?
Right.
So we have this incredible opportunity nowadays where you can get your work and put it out there and share it with people and have it appreciated, which is great. I guess the downside is that because of that, there's so much competition and, you know, everyone's bombarded with imagery left and right.
Yes.
But I guess the good thing about, you know, the traditional arts, you know, sculpture and painting and drawing and that kind of stuff is that it's handmade. It's very tactile. It's something you can hold. And it does get sort of set apart from just digital imagery that you see everywhere, you know, you're bombarded with. So I think maybe it even ups the value of something that's actually like handmade by a person.
Right. Well, we want to be bombarded with things like your art. So I think that's helpful out there in the social media world. I wanted to point out your still life paintings as well. So you have some with the pool. Just looking at these images of Palm Springs and the pool, I'm immediately just, you know, in this trance-like state. There we go. That is so wonderful to walk into a house. And as we always need staging, we always need great imagery. So putting one of these in a listing is sure to make people happy as they walk in the door, which is what we try to do. And I love how you captured this vibe.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, especially like if you're showing a mid-century home and you see the lifestyle encapsulated in artwork, then, you know, it really hits you like, oh, I this could be my home. This is the life I could be living.
Yeah. And this one in particular does not look like a painting, Danny. It does not look like a painting. This looks like a photograph. I was so impressed. And I wanted to ask you, these colors and the shading of this in the pool, how did you do this? What is that secret?
It was, you know, it was hours capturing every little palm frond and all the little details. No, it's funny. I think the more you work with a subject matter, the more you kind of you understand it, and you almost develop like a shorthand on how to capture it and things like that. So I've been painting pink inner tubes and swimming pools for years now. And it's something that I feel I've gotten to kind of know pretty well. The inner tubes are great because it's a solid mass, but it's also translucent, and the way that the light hits it and reflects off of it, but also goes through it and hits the pool and it casts colors and everything. So, it's a matter of sort of laying out the painting. I usually do like one, I draw it out and then I do one layer of paint and kind of step back and see, okay, is this bright enough? Is this dark enough? Should this be more colorful? Should this be duller? And having that initial layer of paint on that really allows me to kind of analyze, you know, what's going right and what's going wrong and what do I do from there. So then I usually do at least a second layer of paint and maybe even a third here and there, you know, touching stuff up. And I think when you build up those layers, you're able to get kind of the right balance. And I think also, with oil paints, I use oil on canvas, oil on panel. Oil paints are great because they can be kind of thin. And when you build up the layers, it allows kind of colors and under light to sort of shine through. It's just crazy kind of, physics and chemistry and all this stuff working that makes the eye just drawn to it.
Yeah, well, it's working very well, I will say. I wanted to ask you about your painting of the Chemisphere. And I wanted to know about that experience, just being at that house and photographing it. What is that like? I know it's very difficult to get to the view that you had of the house.
All right. So between me and you and the audience, I had the pleasure of visiting the house one day via the owner, Benedict Cashin, owns Cashin Books. He's a wonderful gentleman, very kind. And it was also with, Malin, I believe Leonard Malin, who was the original owner and actually worked on the Chemisphere house. So Leonard Malin and his family moved in there. You can only imagine raising a family on this crazy UFO looking building that's perched off a steep cliff, but the family all survived. The kids didn't roll down the hill or anything like that. But I was able to gain access. So my wife owns the Lautner compound, which is a beautiful fourplex designed by John Lautner in the Coachella Valley. And through this Lautner network, you know, they're all kind of connected, all the owners and everything. So we were able to get the invite and go there. And it was such a spectacular experience because it's one of those buildings like, you know, the Empire State Building or, you know, Statue of Liberty or something that you've seen repeatedly in movies and in print and film and everything. Like the Chemisphere was used in multiple movies. I think even in The Simpsons, they did a version of the Chemisphere. To stand in front of this architecture that you've seen and heard about, has all this mythology, is just incredible.
Amazing.
And then just from a technical standpoint, the way it's sort of perched off of this hillside, all the building acumen and engineering that had to go into this thing. And, you know, here it is 50, 60, 70 years later, still standing, perfect shape, is just a marvel, you know? And there's a lot of mid-century homes like that, that were just engineered, you know, they're cantilevered off cliffs. Lautner did a lot of that kind of stuff. Frank Lloyd Wright did. And the fact that a lot of it's still standing, is just like, it's incredible. And this is all before computer-aided drafting. It's all, you know, done by hand and just blood, sweat, and tears. So, you know, stuff like that just made me marvel over this building even more. And then my challenge was like, okay, it's an incredible building. How do you capture it? Right. So,
right. That's amazing. And I think you've captured that, and you've, you know, had such a great portfolio of these houses. So you've sort of kept that in time. You've captured that in time, which is beautiful for us.
Thanks. Yeah. You know, my interests in modernism have sort of broadened. You know, it started with the tract homes and Eichlers and the Alexander homes throughout the Coachella Valley. And I always felt like I needed to challenge myself. And so then I would move on to more specialized buildings, you know, like the Chemisphere. It's a one-off, you know, or I started getting into kind of the bigger city modernism, how architects approached, you know, municipal buildings or apartments and things like that. While it's different, it also has all these common threads with like residential homes. So I've always wanted to kind of tackle all of modernism.
Yeah, well, you have definitely done that. I was going to ask you, is your showing, you're having, obviously, you're showing in different galleries all the time. What is next, or what can people go to that's next for you?
Well, that's a great question, because speaking of, you know, doing different things, my next show is in New York. And for the New York show, I didn't want to just focus on, you know, the buildings and the city modernism again. So I started doing some research and realized that Frank Lloyd Wright developed a whole neighborhood just north of New York called Usonia. And mm-hmm. It him and sort of his associate architects who would do stuff sort of in the Frank Lloyd Wright style. And it's, I don't know, it's like 30 or 40 of these magnificent homes all situated within the beautiful forests up there. So it's modernism, but it's also a completely different aesthetic. You know, it's trees, it's vertical versus, you know, kind of the hills and the desert that I normally paint. So it's going to be really exciting working on the show.
That's so awesome. And I think for those of you that are watching and listening online, please check out Danny's website at dannyhellerart.com. My last question for you is, for everyone that has purchased your art and they have them in their homes and they share it online, what do you hope to communicate to people through your art?
Optimism. It's really about how special these homes are, how optimistic and uplifting they are. And I think that was sort of the whole point of them, you know, in the beginning. Like, they were developed mostly around World War II, post-war, and the idea of connecting with the nature around you via, you know, floor-to-ceiling glass and incorporating outside elements inside, you know, it was all about sort of uplifting the spirit. It was about leisure lifestyle. It was about just kind of that optimism and that forward momentum. And I think we could benefit from that nowadays.
Yes, we can. Right now, especially, I think this is so needed for everyone. And thank you for producing such optimism and for producing such beautiful, happy artwork that we can all share.
Thank you, Monique. I appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time to look at my work, take an interest in it. I really do appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And we'll see everyone next time on the next episode. Thanks again, Danny.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. I hope you had as much fun learning about the world of mid-century modernism as I did. You can also catch the show on my YouTube channel, where we walk through some of the most stylish mid-century modern homes in California. Just search for Mid-Century Modernism with Monique and hit subscribe. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave me a comment to let me know what you think. Your feedback helps me make the show even better. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time on Mid-Century Modernism with Monique.